Hi there, my name's Alex Summers and I'm the Glasshouse Supervisor at Cambridge University Botanic Gardens.
So I've come here today because you've got a very special kind of water lily growing here. What's so special about it?
It's pretty special because it's about 10 times bigger than any water lily that people will be used to in their own back gardens. This lily's from the tropical wetlands of South America. Its pads can grow to about 1.5 metres in size. However, the other species in this genus, Victoria, the pads can grow to about 2.7 metres. You could put a baby onto these pads. In fact, I've seen a small child stood on one.
Okay, so we're going to go into one of your glasshouses and have a look at this. And this is a very hot glasshouse. So I've just walked in and immediately my glasses have steamed up and it's really quite warm. How warm do you have to keep it in here?
So this glasshouse is kept at about 18 to 23 degrees C. However, as everyone can appreciate with solar gain during the daytime, it can get right up into the mid-30s.
It really is huge. It's not like you'd think of a water lily. The leaves are very round and they've got a sort of rim round the edge. What else is different between a normal water lily and this kind?
What we're essentially looking at, the massive leaf, is covered in spines. All of these very, very sharp spines, in fact, it's horrendous to work with, are actually there so it can elbow other leaves out of the way. It also has these huge rims, and these huge rims is to lift those edges which can be nibbled out of the water and to protect them when they're rubbing against each other.
So I can't see the spines on the top of the leaf. Are they underneath?
All the spines are born underneath. In fact, the whole plant, when it's underwater, is spiny. So you can imagine in the water systems it comes from, there are large fish, and those fish will want to nibble on the plant we've got here, and those spines act as a major deterrent for that. But again, I think probably the most important reason is to clear other plants out of the way.
So can we have a look at the underneath of one of these leaves?
Okay, so if I lift one of these leaves out, I can show you that it's got an incredible ribbed architecture. The actual ribbing makes it incredibly strong, which is why you can stand a small girl on it.
So it looks kind of like a load of ladders. We've got ribs going in one direction and then going across in the other direction as well, with some very ferocious looking spikes on it. I can see why this would outcompete any other lilies or other water plants that are around, but there's something else about this water lily that's quite unusual, isn't there? Something to do with the way it reproduces.
We're all used to flowers in our back gardens, and I think what people usually don't realise is plants go to a lot of effort to prevent themselves from self-pollinating. In this case, the flower has what we call a two-day sequence. So on the first day, once the flower opens, and the flower opens after about 6 p.m. in the evening, the flower is functionally female. In this way, it means that pollen isn't mature at this point, so the male part of the flower isn't mature, so that can't drop onto the female part of the plant and pollinate it. So when it's in this state, the flower is white, and the beetles come from all around, drawn in by scent and by the fact that the flower is actually a higher temperature than the surroundings, so the beetles get a thermal reward and they get a food reward when they reach the flower. And they then get in there, scrabble around in the flower all evening, and they mate. So obviously the beetles are mating, the flower is doing its thing as well. And then come the morning, the flower closes down. Over the daytime, the flower will then begin to flush a variegated pink-white colour. It will then open in the evening to release the beetles, and as they leave, the male parts of the flower become mature and will start to release the pollen. So as the beetles disappear, they'll be covered in pollen and will disappear off and hopefully find another flower, and the whole same process will go on again.
So the beetles are actually trapped in the flower. Do they not mind this?
Well, as with all organisms or all animals, I don't know whether it's a question of minding or not minding, but the beetles get quite a major reward out of it. They do it because the actual flower remains hotter in the evening time than the surroundings. In fact, it maintains a similar ambient temperature in the evenings as that required by the beetle for its own metabolism. And also, there's these things called styla processes, and they're basically large bodies of carbohydrate, which the beetles then feed on. So the beetles get a lot of reward out of the whole process, and that's what maintains that relationship between the beetle and the flower. It's also full of males and females, and that's part of the other reason they're there. They're there to fill in their own functional gaps.
So we've got one of the flowers here. It's a lot smaller than I would have expected for the size of the leaf.
Yeah, and I think what we're looking at is a smaller flower in itself. I think if we have our plant is not a huge plant and the size of the plant is somewhat affected by the size of the root system. It's a lot of effort to produce a flower, and so the plant will produce a flower that it's capable to do from the leaf and the crown. But still, it only needs to be a certain size because it only needs to fulfill a certain group of functions. Unlike the leaf, which the larger it can be, the more sun it can get. It's basically a massive solar panel. So the larger your solar panel, the more energy you're able to produce.
So can you talk me through what we can see here? We've cut the flower in half and you can see all of the insides.
If anybody pops into their back garden, they can look at their own water lilies. Firstly, you get the outer sepal, so that's the green part. Then you get the outer petals. They're all the white parts of this flower here. Then the next part we hit are these things here, the stamens. So they're the male parts of the flowers. And there's also something called a staminode. So that's a sterile stamen. And they're just there as an attractant to bring insects in and also to provide a covering over the big hole or pocket in the centre of the flower. Then there's a little funnel shape here, and a bit like a lobster pot, the beetles are funneled in and fall into a big central cavity. We then have these ribbed styler processes, and that's what the beetles can feed on. And then we have a huge bowl, and the bowl is the stigmatic surface. The stigmatic surface is the bit of the plant that's female, and then if the pollen lands on there, it'll grow down into these two ovaries, which are produced in cheek-like structures on the very side bottoms of the flower.
So this flower is pretty spiky at the bottom as well. I guess, is that the bit that would be under the water? So again, it's trying to prevent itself from being eaten?
Exactly. And actually, the flower is produced underneath the water. It only surfaces to be pollinated, then it'll all be drawn back underwater. So all the tissues will constrict, it'll be drawn back underneath water where the seeds will mature and form, and then they'll be released, and they have a little, what we call an aril, so it's like a fleshy outer covering, and they will then be gobbled up by fish and transported around.